Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today's episode is called Finding the Matrix. I think everyone knows that the Matrix today has a series of definitions, none of them which are direct equals to each other. So that mandates that I define what I'm talking about, right? The Matrix I'm talking about is essentially the machine, the location, the relationship we have with whatever force, whatever rules, whatever mechanism holds together our reality as we know it today. And as we don't know it today. That adds a little bit of definition, but what the hell am I talking about? Well, in the movie The Matrix, which obviously is a brilliant creation of the Wachowski brothers. I don't give a shit if somebody says they stole the idea from someone else. You still didn't write the dialogue, you still didn't choose the characters, you didn't do the costume design, the music, or put it together as a movie. So stealing a story is sort of like saying, if you created the time machine and someone said, well, I thought of the time machine too, it's my idea. You obviously know that that doesn't really mean anything. But in The Matrix, the movie, there is a group of human beings that are living in a beautiful universe just like the one that we have. And that's actually not reality. That's a computer simulation. It is fed into the minds of every single living being because they have a gigantic wire going in the back of their lower spine, the lower vertebrae, the brain stem. They have feeding gear going all the way down the spine, which is a little odd. And they're just being harvested for their natural biological energy signatures. All right, humans create energy. The computers we're using, the robots we're using us as gigantic organic batteries. Alright, so in that movie, that's what that was. That's not really what I'm talking about. I think it's a little pathetic and naive that when man talks about the controlling force over us, if one can step outside of a religious construct, a bunch of man-made gods, that a lot of these folks will come down to a dramatic sort of pain and suffering idea of us being slaves. Now, I like it when it's in a movie like The Matrix. That was fabulous. That was great. But when it comes down to us really philosophizing about what could be the reality that we're in, it's sad if someone runs off and starts saying that we're, you know, the slave colony remnants of Nibiru. But if you've been a big fan of Deep Thoughts, you know that I have constantly harped on the notion, and I will never cease to harp on the notion of, why do we sleep? Now, if you're the kind of person that's going to say, because, then this video is probably several years ahead of your intellect. And there's a bunch of folks out there, the majority of the folks, 95%+, who are ready for this conversation, and we've been having it for at least a year. When the body goes to sleep, it is at near 100% functionality. So the idea that somehow the internal organs get to rest, I'm not sure. How many people eat a bunch of shit before they go to bed? Well, at that point, your body's processing a ton of food. It's working a little bit harder. Your temperature goes up, you get sleepy. The more that we work out, the more that we run around during the day, we get more tired, more exhausted at the end of the day. There is a direct correlation with expending calories of energy and being tired. Just on a physical body level. But what's interesting is, for me personally, having been sort of 50-50 extrovert-introvert, even when I stay inside and eat well, don't eat a bunch of candy and weird crap, and I'm intellectually devoted to something, inventing something, I have the same exact, near exact, exhaustion patterns as I do when I'm awake. Now, some of you are aware of your biorhythms, and we, you know, there are biorhythms, it would seem. That's where jet lag comes from, where your body wants to go to sleep at a particular time of day, and it's just strung out on that frequency. But now let's look at the average ratio of awake versus asleep. Now, for those of you teenagers, you cannot put their data into the system. It will not make any sense. But if you think about it, we are awake 2 to 1 over being asleep. We can be up 2 units of time, and then we need to be asleep 1 unit of time. Well, people will look at the rotation of the Earth and simply say, well, you know, it has to do with the sun. All right? Think about it. Winter has really long days, and summer has really short days. So it really can't be tracked back to the sun. I did have a thought the other day, though. I was born in August, late August. And it's interesting that I'm a night owl. And my birthday made me wake up in consciousness in this world and go straight into winter in Deutschland. And so I was experiencing a lot of night while being the first 6 months of my life, right? It was in winter. So I wonder if that's plays any role in those of us that are morning people and those of us that are night people. What's funny in my personal family is that the folks that went into the military are morning people, and the folks that became creative are night people. But this regimen of going to sleep is something that I'm stressing with you, because I believe that the moment that you go to sleep and the twilight zone that you're in before you actually get to sleep, right? That's the mezzanine between being awake and being asleep. That's what it's been called before the show existed. That is the door. That is the moment by which you can step sideways. And, you know, it's just like this. You know, if you were to go on an amusement park ride, and you know that there's a trough line in the outside, and there's a trough line on the inside, and then you finally get into the car, and you ride the ride, right? All right. Well, you know, and it's been portrayed in movies several times, but you know that if you were to get out of the car before it actually takes off, or step out of line and go through the service entrance or something like that, you're going to potentially see all of the mechanics that make the ride work. And I'm going to tell you right now, if we could get an army of us, tens of thousands of us, to try what I'm about to say, someone's going to succeed. Out of sheer luck, someone's going to succeed and report back what they discovered. And it goes something like this. Now, when you go to sleep, you either have two, you're either one of two people. You're a person that falls asleep extremely fast. Your head hits that pillow and you're gone every night. And I am so envious of you. Or you're someone like myself that when you lie down and relax your mind, the entire universe shows up with every idea that hasn't been utilized yet. And so you try to harvest the ideas to pay respects to the opportunities, meaning pen and paper by your bed. Maybe even you have to get up. But eventually you do get to the point where you've harvested all the ideas, even if you can't go to sleep, and then you try to go to sleep. There's nothing worse than trying to go to sleep. But let me ask you, regardless of what side of the fence you're on with those two types, tell me, how many of you have ever remembered the actual process of falling asleep? I mean, you were awake, and you could feel the sheets on your toes, and you could feel your head on the pillow, maybe the breathing of the person you're sleeping with or something, and then you just drift in a direction, or your reality unfolds or overlaps or whatever, and then you're in a dream. Just instantaneously, just whoosh, right? How many of you can remember that? I can tell you that I've only had that experience one time, and it was last summer. But those are the moments that, while we're going into the dream, I'm going to encourage you to do whatever you can to stay conscious in the process, such that you can step off this ride and find the control center. Last year, I was sleeping with a girlfriend of mine, and I did the spooning thing, right? She's already out cold, so I came up behind her. I'm staring at her back. It's nice and warm, summertime. And just as soon as I moved my body forward to complete the spooning, right, my brain flew into her back and into a dream, a bit like the Tron 2 visual for Sam getting inside the computer. It looked like that. It looked like pixels coming at me really fast. It was very interesting. Now, why am I obsessing on sleep? what is the point in finding the Matrix and sleep? There have been a lot of fictional things over the last 20, 30 years that call out to this metaphor, call out to this mechanism, perhaps, this literal mechanism that sleep is imposed on us to do many things, to harvest information out of us, to perhaps feed us with energy, to update our program. Those are all the fictional tales that are being told right now. Westworld on HBO is a beautiful example of a race of hosts, quote-unquote, that are constantly rearranged. Most of them get killed at some point, and then the scenarios that they play in this Western world, and they're just robots. They come in, they evaluate their consciousness, see how well they're doing, clean them up, patch them up, put them back out there. So is this episode simply being overwhelmed by these Matrix movies, these Westworld movies, these Dark City movies? Well, let me throw it to you this way. What is an idea for a story? Have any of you ever written a story before? Even a teeny tiny story at some point in your life? Ever made up a story to cover your ass? Now, if you're making up a story to cover your ass, you're working with a lot more material to begin with. But if you make up a story completely from scratch or reach into the universe to grab one, what you'll notice is that there's this amazing moment that feels a lot like the moment you're trying to go to sleep. Your mind is sort of empty, or you want it to be empty, and it's full of all the day's events, and you're trying to knock out all the day's events because you're trying to come up with an original story, right? What if you live in the bustling downtown Los Angeles ghettos, and you try to come in and tell some science fiction story that's very peaceful and romantic? Trust me, the world you were just in is like a Blade Runner world, and what you want to do is write some amazing love story in space. It's a total contrast of the two. So it's going to be difficult to get the chatter out of your brain to bring in the peace. But when you do harness the story comes from the universe. Now let's think about this. We're always talking about truth on this channel, and there's a huge movement for the truth to come out, and what's really interesting is, to digress for 1 second, think about it. The reason why we need the truth so badly is twofold. We have physical limitations, physical proximity limitations, and us sitting in the same room. Right? I'm not by Qatar. I'm not by Russia. And so I don't just have neighbors that are from these countries. Second thing, we don't speak the same language, so there's a language barrier. Third thing, we have rich people in the world that have been trying to exploit us for fucking millennia. And they have told us lies about each other and why we hate each other without us having the chance to make up our own goddamn minds. Isn't that unbelievable? They convince young teenagers to go out and murder people, telling them, don't worry, they're bad people, just trust me. And by the way, as soon as they're dead, we get all their resources and we get rich and you go home without missing a fucking leg. You should feel patriotic about that, by the way. So we have this gigantic, multidimensional bag of fucking lies, right? We have this scientific community lies to us because you have a bunch of old people that aren't that smart. They don't know how to become smart, and so they take the last thing that sounded clever and they say it's the truth. And there you go. Douglas Adams in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I believe the very first book, he writes about a scientist that invents an amazing machine, and he eventually gets lynched by all the other scientists because they finally realized that the one thing they couldn't stand more than anything else was a smartass. He was so brilliant. Every freaking molecule of his stories are true and just metaphorically enlightening. But your story comes from a frequency of existence and truth. Michael Crichton wrote Westworld way back in the day. I don't even know what year. It was back there far enough that Yul Brynner was able to be in the movie version of it. But there's usually a kernel of truth in all things. So here we have these writers. They're very specific human beings that sit there and they do harvest truths out of the universe to create fiction for us. Sort of pseudo art, you know, imitates life, life imitates art, fiction. And we experience those things. And we've had an overwhelming reoccurrence of this frequency, Dark City, Matrix, and Westworld alone. talk about what happens to you when you go to sleep. Maybe that's an indicator. I've never heard anyone obsess about why we have to sleep. No one argues with it. Everyone's like, oh, of course you gotta sleep. One of our listeners was like, hey man, it's like a binary frequency 01010. It's like, no, it's not. It's 110110. It's two parts on, one part off. Doesn't make any sense. I woke up the other day and it was a very interesting thing. It was probably about 4 a.m, so it was still dark outside. And I'm a very astute person when I wake up. I do not wake up with my head up my ass. I don't wake up groggy usually. But I woke up because something happened in my dream that got a little out of hand. It was something like a shocking moment. It wasn't really scary or anything. It was just something happened quickly. 1, 2, 3, boom. So I woke up. And I remember I was laying on my left side. And I woke up and I'm looking at my eyes, looking out of my eyes. And my room was a bizarre sort of screen of blackness, I would say, with various sort of super dark blue elements in it. So it almost blended in with the black. But what was interesting was it seemed as if most of the reality was sort of rotating slowly, and embedded in the wall of whatever the hell I was looking at were two sort of white LEDs, I'd say approximately 2 feet away from each other and staggered. One was higher than the other. And they stayed totally congruent with each other. And they stayed the equal distance from each other, and they moved down and then slowly, you know, eased in and then locked in place. And all of a sudden, my reality painted itself on that screen. My bathroom, my window, the bed that I was in. But I was completely and utterly blind to my normal reality when I woke up abruptly. Now, well, here's what's interesting. I'm waking up out of a dream where I'm in a completely different location, doing something 100% nonsensical, meaning it doesn't matter what I'm doing here. I'm not, you know, solving a problem or anything. I'm just kind of floating around this universe. But the second that I woke up, and I mean the microsecond that I woke up, this vision, this packet of knowledge went into my brain instantaneously. And that packet of knowledge says something to the effect of, paraphrasing what I was feeling, it said, oh yeah, I'm being updated. I'm not supposed to wake up this fast. I'm not supposed to wake up this way. And it was sort of a benign thing of like, oops, I woke up a little quick and you know, my visual indicators are off or whatever the hell it is. The visual cortex of my brain isn't completely booted right now because something else is happening. But it automatically caught up and started painting my reality again. And when I was a kid, probably 9 years or so, I used to have these visions. It's going to sound strange, but I used to have this vision that was sort of like this Matrix concept as a kid. And here, this is going to be abstract as hell, but it's actually all physical model stuff. But here I am 9 years old thinking about this thing. And I had this overlaid reality on top of the reality that I was in, and it went something like this. You know, when you wake up, you're in your bedroom, and you have, if you were to sort of paint the ground where you walked, you have these patterns that you walk. You think you're walking down the stairs, and so there's the red paint going down the stairs. And then you, if you just did a GPS, basically, pattern of where you're walking, you'd have a pattern of your day on the ground. But I started having this vision, and it kept going and going and going for years, just off and on. It was just a completely pleasant idea, but the idea was this. The idea was that I was actually in sort of a dirt, deserty kind of environment where it wasn't a lot of anything else there, but that I was all by myself in this world. It was perfect sunlight. It's a nice temperature, probably 72, not baking in the heat or anything, but I was wearing sort of like a loincloth in my vision, if anything at all. And all I was doing in real life, this is how the vision worked, that I was actually just walking around in this little dirt desert. And in my brain, I was pretending that I was this kid. I was pretending that I was at these locations. And so it'd be one of these things if I thought I had a car or was riding in my parents' car, I would only be going to a certain place in the desert and sitting on my butt, thinking I was in the car. In my brain, I'm traveling. But then when I get out of the car, I'm still right where I was. And then I make a path for where I think I've gone, you know, like the school or whatever. And so the whole desert's just painted in my footprints. That's a really weird thing to think as a young kid. I guess we all have those little fantasies, little weird things like that. That was one of mine. And that went on for probably, I probably thought of that on and off for 5 years. I haven't thought of that for probably 20, 25 years. So this episode just shook that out of me. There is a video that a friend linked to me, which I'll try to link inside the Facebook. I have to see if I already did it. I might have already done it. But it's a really beautiful, high-def documentary visiting people who have had out-of-body experiences, also known as near-death experiences in this particular case. And you hear all of their experiences of being in car wrecks, getting sick. And what's really beautiful about this is, one, it seems that at least 80% of the people talking are visibly highly intelligent human beings. And they don't seem like the kind of people telling UFO stories that need to be, you know, look at me, look at me. The other 20% or so, I would say you can't read them that well. But they don't seem to be in the me show gear. But they're sort of more stoic. But it's very interesting because one of the women, there's only, I think, one woman in the documentary. And she talks about having her near-death experience in the mid-50s. She's an older woman. And, you know, a lot of their stories correlate with this bright light. There's all kinds of different colors. Some people think it's green. Some people think it's yellow. Some people think it's white. But they always say, look, well, as soon as you get to the other side, you have this amazing comfort that everything's okay. Just immediately, before you get visited by anyone, it's all good. But this woman said something that was very Westworld, which I thought was super ironic that this video comes out. Westworld's on television, which is one of the best shows on TV right now on HBO Go. Definitely worth the monthly subscription, in my opinion. And she says that when she got to the other side, there's, I think, a male host that came and got her. I don't mean to say host as a Westworld host, but it wasn't a relative, all right? It was some arbitrary person. And he takes her down a hallway that she said, well, it looked a lot like a school configuration where there's doors on the left and right side, you know. And she said that inside each one of the rooms, which seemed to have transparent walls made of glass, which is very Westworld, she said that people were on these computers. They had really thin, wafer-thin keyboards, backlit in various prime colors. Now, if someone told you that, you'd be like, yeah, so what? But this is 1954, 55. What was the climate of the world technologically? It was, computers were the size of gigantic warehouses. They were used by the military to calculate trajectory of battleship artillery. They were not something you had in your home, for sure. If you really know what's going on in that era, and if you'd ever seen one, the keyboards were typically attached to the monitor terminal that you're looking at. The only other typing device that we had were probably 95% manual typewriters with a small margin of electric typewriters starting to come out, which I'm not even sure in that early era electronic typewriters were there. But the mechanical miniaturization of microcontrollers to allow you to press on a keyboard in a wafer-thin delivery system, especially with the notion of an LED backlit keyboard, which all of our keyboards have that today, that's, Christ, that's 40 years ahead of the game, at least. You know, Steve Jobs came out with the backlit keyboard in the laptop, I believe, in this 21st century. He's talking about nearly 50 years ahead of the game, 55 years, 60 years. So how is she envisioning things that don't exist? And she was told, it's not your time. But everything's going to be okay. You're totally okay no matter what, and you're going to be fine when you come to the other side for permanent stay. Now, for those of you who are Westworld fans, and if you have any concerns of whether or not you're a host or a guest, the notion is the people giving these stories are definitely not hosts. Because you don't get to continue living outside of the illusion if you're not real. But what is the, I've mentioned this before, but we're talking about the esoteric nature of this whole thing. What is Westworld? Westworld is a circular disc that's painted to look like Southwest America, sort of the Interstate 10 Arizona area. And you go there to vacation. You go there to vacation, you are called a guest, and everyone is a robot android thingy is called a host. And you go there simply to have fun. Can't get hurt because the host can't kill you. What's really weird about it to me is that two guests could definitely get pissed off at each other, get in opposite storylines and want to shoot at each other. And I'm not sure they've really ever explained that in all the episodes that I've seen. But what if this is some amazing vacation to live an alternate life? And you might say, well, there's pain and suffering. There's no way this is a vacation. Really? What if you don't die? What if it's just like Westworld? You can't die. Oh, you might, your character might die. But just like a host, except you're living, you just pop out of the machine. Your head pops out of it. Sort of like the fourth episode of season 2 of Black Mirror. Like I've said in many episodes, the eyes are very specific gateways to the soul, right? And I think it's interesting that when we look each other in the eyes, something very special happens. And it would seem that regardless of how simulated this reality is, when you look in someone's eyes, something very specific occurs. I had this crazy notion, you know, a couple of years ago, probably several years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that the eyes were part of the simulation that weren't allowed to be modified. That we have full mechanical replacements in terms of the entire body that you're in is not who you are, but your eyes are who you are. Which means Marty Feldman was a really weird guy. But wouldn't it be interesting that someone would design us and say, well, you know, you can be an avatar of yourself. But we just have one stipulation. We're going to keep the eyes inside the simulation. Let me throw another advancement to that theory. In Westworld, there's a police force that is part of the outside force that enforces what's going on the inside. If a host starts going crazy, they step in and pull the host out. If a guest has a problem, they step in and help the guest out. Well, let's think about it. What if they needed some mechanism of identification for all of us so they could find us to help us out? And what if the interior of the eye, being this beautiful labyrinth, this beautiful snowflake of individuality, is the mechanism by which they figure out who we are? Seems a little silly. Seems like they could meld that into our DNA, which is very antenna-like, as I've talked about in several episodes. But it would be an interesting conformational mechanism, and perhaps it could be the conduit by which you could find your friends and family within the story. Have you ever had a friend or a girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse, whatever? They're really not good for you. You know, in the story of life, they don't really do any favors. In fact, they're kind of the reason why your life sucks. Or has sucked at times. But you still keep coming back to him. And you're like, hey, you know, it's just you and me, man. For better or for worse, you and me. Maybe it's because on the outside, it's totally for the better. There are no worst factors. But now, why would this thing exist? Why would the Matrix exist? Why would we need to obfuscate an avatar version of ourselves away from our true being? Well, you know, I've said several times, well, what if we live forever? Our souls are made of something that is indestructible. So we'll go crazy like a Q in Star Trek if we don't have individuality and rebirth and life and death and just renewal, right? Well, let me throw you some other ideas, because that might be true in the ultimate scheme of all things. Maybe that's above the first layer that we run into. But let's just say the very first layer we run into, this me waking up in the middle of the night and feeling like I'm being uploaded or backed up or something. I mean, imagine this. Imagine that you wake up every single night. When you go to bed, what happens is you actually wake up and you're who you really are in whatever world we really live in. And you live a whole day or two or three or whatever. And all this is the video game that you saved. And you spend X amount of days, months, and years on the other side. And then you go back to your game, like a PlayStation game. You load it up, and you hop in. And the way it works is that when we're in this reality, we don't remember nor have the ability to think about the writer to the story, or the character in the story. Now, that would not account for our dreams while we appear to be asleep. Because it seems to be that we're never not occupied, right? Horrible sentence. It seems that we're always occupied. How's that? But now, let's just go with a few ideas here. These people that keep waking up and seeing a light, that does seem very celestial. It does seem very godlike. You know, the only thing I could think of that would be fictional would be maybe that the room that we're in is very bright. And then as we come out of this matrix, as our souls, whatever the identity is that is going into these avatars that are us, merely pulls out. And in this other realm, there is no pain. We've managed to fix all medical problems. There's no aches and pains. Perhaps there's really no fatigue. And as you go towards the light, you're simply going towards the room that you're in. As far as the people that say they are traveling through the universe, maybe it's just that's the XYZ coordinate system you are in this particular infinite universe where all these games are being played. And so you sort of go towards the output cable that says this is where you leave. Who knows? Sounds a little silly, doesn't it? But now, what if this reality is modeled after the one that we really exist in? Now, this is not a new idea, what I'm about to say, but it's something that's sort of interesting to remind yourself about, I think, right now. What if a bunch of us are traveling from point A to point B, and in the blackness of space? Maybe because we want to, maybe because we have to. And that journey is going to take a really long time. And so in order to conserve on resources, in order to make sure that we do not lose our minds in the vacuum of space, yes, I understand, space may not exist, but just go with me on this idea, because this is a mechanical pattern that could be, you could substitute the things that I'm saying and still come up with a reason that this could be true. But the reason why we're in this matrix right now is simply to survive. Really long journey, or otherwise we might go mad. I don't really believe that necessarily. But I think it's interesting, the woman that said that she met a guy. She's under 10 when she had the experience. And she sees all these people with computers, with backlit keyboards. That could be she just reached into a future timeline when she was knocked out, and time isn't linear to the soul, and so she was able to look forward. But the fact she met an individual who identified himself, at least in symbol, and walked her through as a very human being, right? Two legs, two arms, that whole thing. Saw other human beings working on these computers. And to think that, there's at least a couple initiatives on planet Earth that we know about where people are trying to create the Westworld reality. You have Kurzweil up there in Mountain View on the Google campus. He is trying to create what's called the singularity. He believes that the human mind is nothing more than a bag of chemicals and little switches. So he's trying to create an artificial intelligence that will eclipse the intelligence of man. Which, you know, as soon as you take all the written works of man and put it into a computer and write pretty good database lookups, you could technically say you have a computer smarter than man. But you know what we're talking about. Organic thought. The James T. Kirk ability to think outside the box and solve problems that everyone thought was impossible. But now, why ask this question? I'm always asking that question, right? Why does it matter that we might discover the ecosystem of our true being? You know, how weird would it be that your consciousness, or I should say your soul, right? Your consciousness is sort of the amalgamation of your soul, your body, and your mind. That's what we call consciousness, right? It is three different things coming together. But let's just say your soul, which is your ultimate level of sentient thought and identity. What if it did leave this world and have a family outside this world, a life outside this world? And you're simply bringing it back into this simulation to play this game one more day. And in your mind, there's no time that's missing. Or maybe there's just restrictions. Maybe it's linear time and we're only allowed to leave for as much as we go to sleep. Have you ever gone to sleep and you had amazing freaking sleep? Get to bed 10 to 12. And for whatever reason, you wake up 12 hours later and you feel like you never slept. You ever had that? Isn't it weird that it feels like, well, geez, it feels like I just lived a whole life. You know, like I tell you, my dreams are insane on the other side. My dreams appear to fill up all the time because I wake up and roll over and I'm totally sentient the second I wake up. And so I don't necessarily have a clock around me or anything that I look at the time. I have no clock in my house that shows the time besides those that are built into the oven and I guess it's just the oven. Yeah. Probably my cell phone, right? But let me throw this at you as part of this exploratory conversation about the Matrix. Let me ask you this, man. Do you believe that you have the right to just go to heaven anytime you want? Based on the paradigms of religion that we learn? Heaven being what? Heaven is defined really as two things. Where God lives in his pure form. And for all of your relatives that were good people, they're up there too. Depending on your belief systems, right? I think I can answer the question for most of us. The 99.9% of you, if you have any belief in a heaven or a destination after this life, you, like me, have initially adopted the idea that that is not allowed. It's not allowed for us to just go to heaven. Why? Well, we have to live a good life here, then we have to die at some point, and then we get judged, and then they figure out whether or not we have the privilege of being in a heaven. Let's rewind, remove religion, man-made religion with man-made definitions of a wrathful, immature, stupid God, and let's just let God be this infinite, omnipotent, virtually emotionless being, but he's constructed of pure love. So by design, he is warm. Now let's look at this Matrix thing and realize that maybe the next level of existence that we're perhaps even in, right, this ecosystem that we're in, you know, which is an ecosystem, would be a circle of life that we live, right? We wake up in the morning and then we go to bed at night. We wake up in the morning and we go to bed. You know, we live our life 2/3 of the day and we dream 1/3 of the day, roughly. Some people only sleep 4 hours. But we're in this system, right? What if part of that journey is going someplace else? We simply don't remember that we do it photographically. And the next layer up, that's a part of that ecosystem, a next layer up of consciousness, isn't heaven at all. Even if that exists, it's another form of reality that we have created. We are trying to create virtual reality right now, augmented reality, immersive reality. We're trying to do that right now. We're trying to rebuild the entire universe. Video games have been doing it for decades and decades and decades. You know, for those of you who played coin-op games in the 70s, well, Didn't you feel like you were inside the Space Invaders universe after you played it for 30 minutes? Did you feel like you were a little triangle shooting asteroids back when you played Asteroids as a kid? Your brain usurps the screen, makes it your reality. All right. What the hell would stop us from becoming, well, one, the human race manages to live a million years, so perhaps in a more peaceful, perfect incarnation in a different part of the universe. Maybe it's this universe, but again, we have our head inside these amazing goggles when we're in this world. What would prohibit us from creating the reality that we know right now? I would say that if man can survive 500 years without having a nuclear holocaust, without having some horrific thing that sets us back, if we live another 500 years, I guarantee you hundreds of years before that 500-year mark, this reality that we're living right now will be completely simulated. We will, within this construct, be able to create this construct. Feelings, all the five senses. Guarantee it. Guarantee it. For all we know, the movie Brainstorm happened before the movie Brainstorm was released in 1981-82. So we accept this reality because we accept the paradigms of limitation. That's why we accept it. But we don't have to. We do not have to accept this reality. And all that means is, like the movie Time Bandits, there are little doors that present themselves to us at certain points in the day, certain points in our ecosystem traveling of a 24-hour period, where we can step off. And the beautiful thing is, it's not a physical thing that we do. I don't walk 10 feet behind this chair and find some black door where I hop in. It could be as easy as laying your head down on a pillow and simply paying attention to the process of going to sleep. And when you're supposed to go with the rest of the cattle straight into the simulation of dream phase, you step right or you step left. You go through that door that says, employees only, authorized staff only, or whatever. You just walk right through it. Fuck those guys. Yeah, they'll be surprised to find you there. But maybe the mechanism by which we cannot remember what's really going on when we sleep never disengages for you. Sort of like Westworld. In Westworld, and this is no... there's so much going on in Westworld, I could tell you 10 things about Westworld that might be mini spoilers and it wouldn't spoil anything for you. But one of the tiny little things that you learn that makes this story interesting to watch in the first place is that the hosts are starting to wake up very, very slowly to their reality. And you have these arrogant humans that are guests walking around talking about how they aren't real right to their face, or having third-person conversations while a host is right there, or saying to their face, you're not real, are you? You're one of them, aren't you? We don't have anyone really saying that in our world because we're all asleep, maybe. Now, there's all these parsings I've done with dreams, which is all about when we're in dreams, we really don't have our instrumentalities, right? We really don't have our arms and our legs the way we do in this world. We don't feel reality when we're in a dream like we feel it in this world. I forgot to mention something that I noticed as a kid about dreams when I was really young. What I realized was that I could dream visually things that I haven't seen before. Meaning I could make a monster, I could make a car I've never seen before, do all that stuff. But the one thing my mind is unable to simulate is sound. I can't make a sound that I've never heard of in my dream. It's very interesting. Personally, that's just my limitation. I'd be interested to hear if you guys have that limitation, but take a few days to sift through your experiences to make sure that your immediate answer is one that you've tested a little bit. This last night, this morning, I guess you could say, I dreamed of driving a Lamborghini again, and I've driven them a few times. They have an engine that makes a sound that is unlike any other engine I've ever heard. It's a beautiful thing. But I got in this car, and my brain could not accurately represent the engine sound being inside the cockpit of this car. Which is sort of weird because I've been in the cockpit of a Lamborghini and I've driven one. But my brain just wasn't going to attempt to try it. Because my fondest memories of the engine, I believe, is standing outside the car while it's being turned on. And because we had to park it in this really tight garage. And so my girlfriend at the time would pull it out. And I'd be watching. I loved hearing it turn on. I loved hearing it pull out of the parking space. And then she let me drive it. But being inside, it's definitely a muffled, amazing sound. But the car was all black, and it was like a bizarre model that didn't really exist. But I got inside, and, you know, they don't have, keys that you turn. Your keys in proximity to the car's ignition system. You flip up this tab, and you push this button, and the car starts like a fucking spaceship. It's wild. But I'm in the car, and I remember being in the dream and thinking to myself, this obviously isn't real. I obviously don't own this car yet. And I push the button, and there's no noise. But then I'm thinking, well, I really want to drive this car, so I'm going to push the gas pedal and see what happens, right? So it's like an electric car. It didn't have any sound, and I'm sort of driving this car around. It sort of had, 20% of the feeling of really driving the real car because you didn't get the ferocious monster sound that is the V12 in the back, right? So it's interesting. It's interesting to note how detailed your dreams can get versus this reality, and why is that the case? Now you might ask, well, if anything of what you're saying is true, then why are dreams so gimped? Why can't we remember them? I don't know. In Westworld, fairly early in the episode, and this is by no means a spoiler of any kind, the gentleman that Anthony Hopkins plays talks about the fact that one of the things that they did to let the hosts feel more real and to give them a slightly more organic feel to the rest of the humans was to give them sort of an echo chamber inside their consciousness so that they could sort of hear the remnants of their own code. And you'll find out there's some repercussions when that happens. Fairly benign, but it happens. And I think that obviously dreams are constructed out of things that we've experienced, which is maybe why we can't really dream of things we haven't experienced, such as space. It doesn't mean space doesn't exist. It just means we've never been there, except in fictional senses. But it's profound that, again, people that work in special effects and have done space scenes for 20 years solid never dream of it. It's really interesting. But I dreamed of a Lamborghini because I love them. I think they're amazing cars. I want one. I want two. But what is the internet today as it sort of relates to these advanced subjects of thought, right? I only say advanced not because they're super smart or anything. It's just because we don't talk about this stuff. There's definitely basic thoughts that we have. Hey, what should we put on the Christmas tree this year? And they're advanced thoughts of existentialism and who the hell are we? What are we made out of? How many experiences do we have on a daily basis that are almost entirely undefined that we completely accept? I think that we could probably convince ourselves and almost reprogram our minds. I mean, we have a computer inside of our head no matter what, no matter if it's a proxy system to the soul. We seem to have, especially if you open your mind, a complete gateway to infinite knowledge. The most incredible inventors in the world talk about this. The most incredible writers in the world talk about this. So I think that if we have a separate reality or multidimensional realities that we access through some ecosystem but don't remember, that we could actually reprogram our senses to allow us to see it. And so I want to use this channel as a mechanism to get you guys to start thinking in like this, because I believe your talent for this could be instantaneous. You know, some people pick up guitars and for whatever reason, their brain thinks in the octave fret system. They pick a string and they realize all the dynamics of muffling with their hand, their palm. Some people pick with their fingernails. Some people pick with little picks on their fingers like Stevie Ray Vaughan. Some people use plastic picks. And it's just natural to them. And so some of you are going to probably get to a point where you'll find out you have a natural knack for parsing reality. I hope you don't go crazy in the process. But I've been trying this thing of staying conscious while falling asleep for, I'm going to say, 35 years of my life. I have tried to pay attention, or I have paid attention, excuse me, but I've never, except for one time last year, actually experienced the transitional phase of being awake to being in a dream. I certainly don't have any memories of simply turning off, right? I don't have a memory of putting my head down and going, and then somehow there's a void that I can actually remember. I turned off. When you think of venomous insects, venomous snakes, and other animals that kill us by pausing our nervous system, right? Isn't the black mamba that does it to us? All you have to have is your nervous system turned off for a fraction of a second, and you're dead for the rest of your life, right? You're dead. That's a funny thing to say. So imagine you going to sleep, and somehow your brain achieves a zero-sum game. You're sort of, your autonomic system is obviously taking care of your heart and your blood flow and all that good stuff, your organ functionality. But your consciousness, and you know, the venom is turning off everything. It's turning off your autonomic and your consciousness at the same time, as I understand it. But the idea that our brains could actually completely shut off is a little hard to believe. Now, I have friends that say they don't dream, or they haven't dreamed in years. And there's a bizarre thing that happens to me, a reaction that happens to my heart when I hear that. Two things specifically. One, it's hard for me to imagine that they don't dream. And that hard to imagine feeling makes me think that something's wrong with them, that they're broken, or they're more primitive. It's weird. And I don't mean to pass judgment, because some of my most brilliant friends in the world who, when they're conscious, they are a tour de force of creativity and amazingness, right? But they'll tell me they don't dream. Yeah, immediately I also think about them brushing with fluoride and poisoning themselves with shit, but I've had pretty good dreams when I was chewing down the fluoride too, right? But the second part of my brain goes, how is it possible? How is it possible that they can't dream? What happens to their brain when they fall asleep? How is it possible? How is it possible that I dream profusely? I mean, to a point, it's exhausting after I wake up half the time because I feel like I haven't slept. I mean, I'm having a good time in my dreams, trust me. But what's the biological difference? Are they hosts? And I'm a guest? Now, virtually every single human being that I've met, I don't know any human being that has ever told me ever that they've never had a dream. And so they've sort of authenticated themselves as an equal, not a host, which would be a robot, by saying, yeah, I've had dreams. I just don't have them right now. Part of me thinks they're simple-minded. Not in any bad way, because again, when they're awake, they're tour de force. They're amazing. They outperform me 10 to 1 sometimes. But maybe it's just a mere paradigm shift of understanding and deciphering what a dream is. Maybe their lack of interest in dreams and their imperative nature and relationship to dreams in their own mind, meaning they don't believe they should have dreams or need to have dreams, satiates them so much that when they go down, they're 100% out. Maybe it's the configuration of the PlayStation game we're playing. A sort of crude analogy would be you're at Disneyland, and Disneyland closes at midnight. You're supposed to be out of the park by 1 o'clock so they can do maintenance until it starts up again the next morning. And most of us would go home. Yeah, it's time to go home. My feet hurt. I'm exhausted. I've eaten all the candy and sugar. I've ridden all the rides I want to ride. I'm going to go home. And maybe that's the individual that has no dreams. But there's some of us kooks that would say, well, would you let me stay? Could I watch the maintenance program happen? Can I ride a couple of the rides just as you know, you're trying to test to see if they're working right? I'd be more than happy to sit in the car while you run the car around 20 times in Space Mountain. Maybe that's the decision, the difference, the configuration, the setting in the video game that lets us stay around and play with the toys of consciousness, which would be dream world, right? I like Lamborghinis, so I keep dreaming about them. But now what if we could bring the two hemispheres together? What would that do? I'm sure someone's tried it, which is why we don't do it. What am I talking about? Well, you don't forget anything. You go to sleep, and whatever the hell is actually going on when we're asleep is fully memorized. I mean, photographically memorized. If we pop out of this universe and we walk around a hallway with a bunch of people with keyboards, like that woman said when she had the near-death experience, well, what if we knew what we were doing? Now you pop out, eat some lunch up there in the simulator. Talk to some of your friends. They explain it to you. Oh, yeah, you know. You've only been playing this game for like a couple hours, but how many years do you think you've lived? Oh, I've lived 47 years. Isn't that crazy? Wow, that is crazy. 10 minutes? I've only been there for 10 minutes? Yeah, you know what? And your time's up in like 10 more minutes. So take your lifespan and double it. That's how long you're going to live. Some other dude finds out he's 20 years old and he's only got one more minute left. Maybe that's why they don't let us know. Don't take any of that to heart. There's a group of scientists that are trying to crack the universe in the name of dimensions, in the name of a matrix, in the name of a simulation, a computer simulation of reality, and they're trying to do it on a subatomic level. Right? They're figuring out the behavior of energy in the universe. And they're trying to reverse engineer what the world really is from a purely mechanical standpoint. Now, maybe there are clues that can be derived from the physical properties of this universe that would reveal the more conscious-based properties of the universe, right? Our mental state, our souls. But what if that can't be done? What if all you're going to do is find out how the Matrix is made? Now, perhaps they do us a favor and they show us how, and there's some similarities for how we build personal computers and supercomputers and how the universe is put together. But then someone could come in and say, well, of course, the mathematical principles by which the universe is created are bound to echo into your sub-creations because you're pulling the schematics out of the universe and you're simply creating a small miniature version of whatever mechanical device you create. It still doesn't explain who you are. It really doesn't explain where you are. And it certainly doesn't explain the ecosystem that you're in, the hiking path that you go on a 24-hour basis of being conscious, being unconscious, by our definition, right? I want us to crack this, man. The very first step is to have these deep thoughts, conversations about the subject matter, to address all the low-hanging fruit, and then to crawl up the trunk a little bit of this tree to find the branches that aren't quite as visible. Now, my thought process is, this could be a tree that's 100 feet tall, which is still formidable, 10 stories high. Or it could be a redwood tree that's 1,000 feet high. It could be a lot higher than that. And each one of these branch junctions in the trunk is what we have to explore before we're going to really figure out what the top of the tree is like, which is where this bright light exists, right? All the fictional stories told about, you know, artificial humans that have any dimension to them, they talk about, as they did in Sing the Body Electric, Twilight Zone, written by Ray Bradbury, who I thought Philip K. Dick did write one of the Twilight Zones, and I had to figure out which one it was. But Philip K. Dick took that story and wrote, do robots dream of electric sheep? But they all come back to this idea that I guess has been around for the last 70 years, roughly, that if you're going to create an artificial intelligence, that a backstory is really important. Westworld is engaging this theory 100%. And I've never read the book, so I don't know if Michael Crichton also folded up that idea back in the 70s. Well, let's just say he did. Then look at the ecosystem of our conscious state in this particular simulation. We have strife. We have obstacles. We have success. When we're on the downswing, when things aren't going right, we don't really enjoy life that much, right? Not unless you've done this several times and you realize it's just a swing in that direction. Eventually it bottoms out and eventually you pop back up. Once you realize that's the cycle of life, peaks and valleys, like I've said several times in the show, you start to thrive on the idea that you're going into a dip because the bounce back is usually going to outdo all the other peaks you've ever experienced in your life. So you think when you're 22, you've experienced the most you're ever going to experience in life, the best moment you're ever going to experience. And then you're 32 and you think, shit, man, this is even better than when I was 22, and then 42, and then 52. It's one of the reasons why I feel uncomfortable around individuals that live in the past. Because I think that they're committed against having a better experience in the present. They're, you know, now do we run the risk of messing up this matrix that we're in that is probably very balanced and very intentionally created to be balanced? Where again, I say life is fair because anything can happen to you, not because everything goes right. If we engage the matrix, if we figure it out, if we look behind the curtain and find out that we are in some simulation, whether it be we're forced to be here or we choose to be here, or it's just the way it is, do we injure this reality? I don't know. It's obviously, if it does exist, it doesn't make itself present to us. It doesn't make itself aware to us. So it seems as if there's been an intent to ensure that we don't see it. So are we violating some policy by attempting to find it? Now, Westworld has a very interesting correlation with what I'm saying. I'm, you know, I swear to God, Westworld's not done, so I haven't made the special report on Westworld, but I will make a special report on Westworld once it's complete. It'll be a complete spoiler episode, so I will warn you that that's what's going to be happening. If you watch that and you haven't seen it yet, do not watch me talk about Westworld in a special report if you haven't seen the episode, unless you think there's no reason in the world you'd ever watch it. Then watch my episode, and then you'll be enticed. I guarantee it's worth your while. But in the Westworld, this is, again, not trying to spoil anything for you at all. If anything, hopefully this is a sort of a trailer, a teaser as to why you might want to watch it. There's so many things going on in that world. There's just the actors are brilliant, so well cast. But anyway, there is it's a product, right? Westworld's a product for human beings called guests that go in and experience this vacation. They are very clear that it is a very expensive privilege. You must be very wealthy in the outside world to get privileges to go into this world. And they haven't really defined more than a subway and sort of the orientation to going into Westworld very lightly. So you don't really know what the real world's like on the outside, which is kind of clever because then hopefully they can reveal this at some point. As of this recording, they've only aired 9 episodes. Season finale comes, I guess, next week. You will not want it to end, trust me. But there is a character in the series that is looking for a deeper layer of the game, a secret layer to the game, outside of staying in the normal areas and engaging sort of the wild, wild west, which, I mean, the stories are so clever. You can sleep with prostitutes, have gun battles, you can go on prospecting, treasure hunts, you can get involved with various wars and that kind of stuff. So they've really created these scenarios of the Wild Wild West that are just classic Hollywood fun stuff. But there is a thing that is yet to be defined, really, as of episode 9, which is fantastic. Hopefully season 2 takes on this 100%. But there is a hidden level to the game that is much deeper, and I assume much darker, and where guests, I think, I don't know, where the human guests can be injured and possibly even die if they go to this other layer of the game. We're yet to see what that is, but it's exciting. But now imagine taking that concept into our discussion today that if we come out of the matrix and we really figure out what's going on, what if we're forbidden to come back? What if we're forbidden to come back into this until we've wiped out our memory of that knowledge? And why would that be the case? Because we would be polluting the timeline of this world. I'm making this show on YouTube. I've got a little over 1,000 subscribers. Okay. What if I figure this out? What if one of you figures it out? And you start posting all over these videos, I've been there. This is what it's all about. Here's how you do it. When you're about to fall asleep, you wiggle your left pinky and you jiggle your right leg. And boom, you're going to be walking sideways and going through all of the back doors and meeting these individuals that take care of our reality. Well, don't you think they've spent a lot of time building this matrix, if it exists? They wouldn't want it to be undone. They wouldn't want you to be a celebrity and go on television and say, listen to me, you know, make a YouTube video, right? And say, hey, this is what's really going on. This is how you find it. This is how you realize what it is. So perhaps there's an element of security to this realm, and that's why we're not allowed to see it. There's been a lot of interesting sci-fi stories. Star Trek did this once, and I'll just close on this idea. Where the Enterprise, the Next Generation, found themselves bumping into a planet that had a society on it that had been managed to hide themselves in the universe. And I forgot what the reason was. It's like somehow they don't want to be discovered. They want to stay hidden. I forgot what it was. But anyway, they didn't want to be discovered. So their technique for like God knows how many millennia was that if any ship were to find them, they gas the ship, or I think it was gas, but maybe it was just a beam of sound or something, but it makes everyone pass out on the ship, and they board the ship, and they rewind everyone's brains to not remember being there, and then they put the ship further down the line, and they simply make them not interested in that area of space, and essentially they skip past it, and they don't remember that they actually discovered it. They don't remember having conversations about it. Because the threat is, if you refuse to go along with our program, then we'll kill you. And so everyone goes, oh yeah, that sounds good. Don't kill us. But the problem was is that Data was a robot, an android, and he couldn't be put to sleep by this technique. And so he stayed conscious. And so he always knew that they had discovered this location. And so the episode goes that they all wake up, but they start noticing anomalies. Beverly Crusher, the head doctor, was growing some spores in her room, and they seem to have aged several days, if not, I guess, hours or days, way beyond what Data said had happened while they were all asleep, because Data, I think, said, you guys were unconscious for a few minutes or something like that. And so they force him to admit what happened, and he goes, look, and then there come the aliens again, look, we made a deal and you've broke the deal. And, of course, they figure out, well, the problem was is that we didn't cover our tracks well enough. So now we're going to cover our tracks perfectly. You're going to do your little magic trick, and there will be no inquiries to this, and Data will keep his mouth shut. And that's how it ended. But imagine you pop out every night. I pop out every night, and we completely learn where we are. Sort of like that scene in Matrix where Neo's yanked out of his little, you know, pod, except at the end of every session on the outside, we go back into this game. We don't remember waking up. Now, the gist of the whole thing is that we're safe. We're totally safe. There's no horror movie going on here. We're okay. Like those people that had near-death experiences and maybe have met some of these individuals, and they kind of figure, well, no one's going to believe them, so let the half a dozen characters a year who die and meet us go on with their lives. We don't have to go in and mess with them. It's an interesting idea. So this is the episode that dives deep into this idea that the world is a simulation. People have asked me to do this, and I couldn't figure out an angle that really mattered to me. And this is where it kind of combines my own personal journey through trying to decipher the purpose of dreams, the purpose of sleeping, and some of these concepts where we seem to be having a hive mind awakening of the fact that this might be a simulation. It's all over the web. All the scientists are, well, shouldn't say this, a bunch of scientists are studying this on a daily basis. A bunch of spiritual people are studying this on a spiritual basis. And some of us weirdos on this show are studying it from both sides, right? I think that's it. I think you feel me. If you dig the series, please subscribe. If you dig this episode, please give me a thumbs up. Ton of episodes in the queue. I'll try to release this one a little bit earlier. I've got another episode coming where I'm going to have to do a lot of inserts of pictures and stuff. And so that always takes a lot of time. But I have quite a few in the queue. So anyway, if you join me today, thank you so much. You know, our subscriptions are kind of stuck at like 1,088. It's really weird. It's like I'll gain one, I'll lose one, I'll gain one. It just kind of sits there at 1,088. People who enjoy the show are sort of mystified why the subscriptions are so low. I would say, well, a lot of people have been completely enamored with the election in America. So I think people have been preoccupied away from deep thoughts in general. Hopefully, we get back on track as a society and start expanding our minds. So the only person that can start a forest fire of subscriptions is probably you, because I don't have any time to do it. So anyway, if you've been joining me throughout the show, thank you so much. If you've been commenting, triple thank you. Please keep them coming. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.